Welcome to Place and Experience. Indulge your senses with immersive game titles. Boost the excitement with our engaging promotional tools and generous network promotions. Be in control with XI Viewport Management Tool and experience seamless gameplay powered by X Platform. Enjoy Place and Experience as our partners do in over 20 regulated markets. And get ready to go big. Big Play is on.
Well, there you have it. Welcome to another edition of Weekly News Live. And let me say right at the top of the episode, thank you to Playson for sponsoring this episode and keeping us coming back every single week. I'm joined, as you can see, by my esteemed colleague and friend, one of the tentpoles of the iGaming media landscape. He is the man, the myth, the legend, Jake Evans. Jake, thanks for joining us. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you, Connor. Thanks for the intro. Great to be back. I think this is possibly my first appearance of the year. I couldn't help noticing I've been phased out of the intro credits there in favour of your lovely face, Connor. And what a trim you had back then, I must say. Short and sharp.
It hasn't lasted until now, as you can see. I have a conference for a week, so I better get this tidied up. But yes, we are heading straight into spring, which I think has sprung. You can see the sunshine behind me out there. Everything's good. Of course, I should mention, Jake, that you're with us this week because my regular co-host, a certain Mr. Nico Janssen, is, of course, in New York City, baby. He's in the Large Apple, eating dollar slices and drinking beer and having a good time, I'm sure, at the next New York Summit or next Summit New York or whatever order those words go in. Are you jealous, Jake? Are you sad to be missing out?
I am, actually. I didn't think I would be, but I've seen the pictures on WhatsApp and on social media. And by all accounts, it sounds like it's been a really good show. Obviously entering into the second day proper of the event now. Some good content lined up, and obviously we've sent our roving reporter Zach to the event, so I think he's going to chip in with some good stories and get some interviews done with some of the big US execs that are over there, like Adam Greenblatt at BetMGM and Matt King at Fanatic. So hopefully we'll have some really nice content for you in the next week or so, on next couple of days even.
Yeah, absolutely. Zach's out there doing the work of the whole team. He's a man on the ground, and I'm sure he'll be bringing back lots of insights for us from New York. But anyway, we are here, of course, in Britain, and we have, as if to prove a point, lots of big and interesting stories happening here in Britain. First of all, the biggest news of the day, I think, Jake, is the full year results from Entain, who have released their 2023 results today. So I don't want to get too bogged down in the numbers here because that can get a bit garbled and annoying. But basically, revenue is kind of up double digits on a constant currency basis. So I think about 14% in a constant currency basis, including BetMGM, the joint venture with MGM Resorts. But on a pro forma basis, growth was basically flat, I think. So it's up 2% on a pro forma basis. Online net gaming revenue, again, was up 12% on a constant currency basis, but down 3% pro forma. So Entain's gone to great lengths to present these figures in just about every conceivable way you can think of. They've obviously got a diverse global business and they're dealing with lots of different currencies, and obviously those fluctuations do have a big impact. But the headlines for me, financially speaking, are EBITDA is flat. Well, it's actually up 1% at just over £1 billion. But there was a loss after tax, so a kind of net loss, loss after tax, technically, of £879 million. So mega loss there. That all was related to the obviously massive settlement that Entain's had to pay for all these dodgy dealings in its former Turkish business. Share price is down 5% on the news. That's about all I'm going to tell you about the numbers because I'm trying to keep it brief. Jake, you've been listening in this morning to their webcast. I know they had a video feed and I think they had probably some shareholders live with them in their offices, but they also broadcast it online. What were your impressions of that kind of management commentary today?
Yeah, thanks, Connor. I think you called it global and diversified business for Entain when reporting those numbers. I think I'd call it messy, but there we are. It was as so often with these kind of financial results stories, you're right, it was the webcast that was the really interesting part. And you know, much of that was to do with the fact that Stella David, who's the interim CEO now, was leading the presentation basically. So obviously it's the first time she's kind of spoken publicly. And what was really notable for me was that she basically spent the entire session kind of trying to undo the corporate strategy of the previous regime, if you like. So she kind of said multiple times that Entain was a betting and gaming company, and it shouldn't be ashamed of that. And her whole approach while she is in charge sounds like it's going to be about, you know, going back to basics and concentrating on what they're good at, basically. Even though she was on the board, wasn't she, when Jetta was CEO, but she basically said that, you know, the move by Entain last year into kind of media and affiliation and esports, she said that was frankly a distraction. And that the company will be kind of distancing itself from those sort of additional verticals going forward, I suppose. That was kind of the core message, and that's interesting to me because let's not forget that they basically, you know, underwent an entire kind of corporate rebrand and name change on that basis under the last CEO. So, yeah, I guess shareholders will just be thinking kind of, well, you know, what a waste of time that was.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And I think if we look back as well, I haven't got the graphic to show you, but if I'm just looking here on the side, if we look back at the share price performance, the price today is the same price it was in about August 2020. So, you know, it's nearly 4 years since then. And anyone who's been holding the shares since then has had nothing out of it, basically. They also, yeah, shares were actually trading higher all the way back in 2017. So even if you're a shareholder since then, the last 6.5-7 years, you've got a return of basically zero on that. So yeah, I do think there's a feeling probably in the market that why have we wasted all this time and effort? And I guess the new strategy kind of came shortly after the corporate rebrand from GVC to Entain, and it kind of, I think first there was a focus on, what do you think? Do you think there was a drive to focus more exclusively on regulated markets, and that was what kind of drove this interest in branching out into things like esports media, trying to find some new revenue avenues?
Yeah. Listen, I think it's difficult. I think Jetta obviously came in from outside of the industry, which means that you have an outsider's perspective, right? Which of the gambling industry is you need to get better at corporate social responsibility. You know, it's all about branding and attracting investment without obviously pointing to the obvious that we're a gambling company, and some of our practices have undoubtedly been questionable over the last few years, which is why we're seeing all these responsible gaming measures coming in. Alongside that, I suppose, you know, one of those prongs is kind of a focus on diversity and inclusion, which are all important kind of facets of any public company and shouldn't be ignored. But when they're ignored to the detriment of core performance, I think that's when it becomes an issue. And that kind of did happen with Entain. It almost forgot what it was good at, which, as you know, Stella pointed out rightly this morning, is betting and gaming. So I think that's why they've reverse that strategy. And obviously, Connor, you were talking about the state of the share price, and I think what we're going to see now at Entain is a lot more influence from investors. We've seen obviously Ricky Sandler from Eminence Capital. He was one of the big kind of disruptive investors behind the scenes pushing for change at Entain, and obviously he's got himself a seat on the capital allocation committee now. So I think they're going to have a much bigger say in the strategy going forward, and that was clear today on the call, because alongside obviously distancing themselves from kind of Jetta's approach, the other thing was BetMGM, which I think, you know, is a key topic and probably isn't going to go away until there's a kind of resolution, if you like, between Entain and MGM. But she was really interesting on that. She said she likes to imagine Entain and MGM as kind of co-parents of this child or this brand that is BetMGM. And she said basically Entain had learned from its mistakes because it had spent too much time on BetMGM to at the expense of kind of its other brands and other markets. That to me sounds like it is coming directly from a shareholder. You know, that's a deliberate kind of strategy play. And I think we've seen, you know, back end of last year and this year, we've seen MGM ignore the joint venture and kind of go full steam ahead with international expansion on the Leo Vegas platform, let's not forget, which is obviously doing really well in the UK with BetMGM. So, you know, that's a brand that's probably taking share off Entain brands, you know, Ladbrokes and Coral. So I think Entain is probably now thinking, well, you know, without trying to kind of play up to MGM and scratch sort of every itch that they ask us to, I think they're going to think, right, well, we're just going to do what we need to do now, because that's the way you've been carrying on.
Yeah, it's a curious one, though, because if you look at the results today, BetMGM generated net gaming revenue of nearly $2 billion in 2023. So that's almost half. It's probably about a third of Entain's total group NGR. So it's a huge figure. It's not, you know, to be sniffed at. And I think there's probably a concern, or certainly I would be concerned. We've spent all this money now and time and effort. We've got this JV in place so that we can carve out a reasonable portion of the US market. It would be a shame, let's say, to abandon all that effort and let the market share continue to dwindle, because we have seen that happening already over the last few quarters. BetMGM share, market share has gone down something like 25% down to 15% or something like that. It's lost quite a lot of share, which yeah. I would also find quite concerning if I were a shareholder. It's like, well, we've invested it now, so if we really believe in the long-term prospects of this market, then let's go for it. As it happens, I played on BetMGM when they first launched in the UK, because the bonus offer was not bad, actually. And mm-hmm. I took a little bonus and put a bet on some horses. And I didn't find it to be an altogether gratifying experience. That's my view. I usually use an independent bookmaker based in Stoke-on-Trent, yes, as you know. I soon went back to them. But anyway, yeah, let's talk about Stella David, which we're already doing, because she's a really interesting figure, I think. This appears to me to be her first big appointment in the gambling sector. She used to be the CEO of WM Grant and Sons. Is it William Grant and Sons? Anyway, whiskey firm, an alcohol company. She was CEO there for nearly 7 years, from 2009 to 2016. And since then, she was interim CEO at Clark's, the shoe shop. I mean, not the shop, but the company. Huge company,
massive job.
Firm. Yeah. And then she's been a non-executive director and a senior independent director with all sorts of companies: Domino's Pizza, View Cinemas, Norwegian Cruise Line Holdings, Bacardi. So all these huge consumer-facing businesses. She's obviously got a great kind of business experience there that all these boards think she has a real value to offer to them. She joined Entain as a senior independent director in 2021. And there you have it. Within a couple of years, interim CEO. She's straight in there, replacing Jette after her departure. So, well, first and foremost, today And that investor call that we mentioned was kind of her first real outing under the CEO title, sort of into the spotlight with Entain. And it was her first, I think, first major kind of public appearance as interim CEO. So what did you make of it overall?
Yeah, I think she was really good. First thing to note is that they've gone back to doing a kind of live presentation. I remember under Yetta, it was kind of a pre-recorded thing where they were, you know, sat reading a script off a computer and then the Q&A was live. So they've gone back to the old school way, if you like, of doing things, which I think certainly investors and the bankers and the analysts in the audience will appreciate. She was well rehearsed. She was very no nonsense. I guess you don't get, you know, into the executive positions that she's been in if you are full of nonsense. But yeah, I got the impression that it was kind of her audition for the job on a permanent basis, definitely. She said in her opening remarks that she was an interim CEO, but by no means a caretaker CEO. And I think a lot of the kind of strategic, like 180 that we've just talked about is coming from her. So yeah, quite impressed. The Q&A was a particularly interesting bit because that's obviously when they're, you know, they're put on the spot and it's not stuff they've worked on for weeks leading up to the event. So one thing was funny, she was asked, or the panel was asked for an update on the search for a permanent CEO, and she kind of joked that she should, you know, take offense at that question, which I think obviously implies that she wants the job. She did say there was a process still ongoing with kind of, you know, an external recruitment consultant. So I don't know how far down the line they are with that. But another question was based on motivating staff, if you're the CEO. So obviously, you know, with poor performance or disappointing performance in 2023, she openly said there were unlikely to be any bonuses. So how do you kind of, you know, incentivize middle management and those in the business with stock options? And her response to that was that it's basically through like really clear communication, you know, openly speaking regularly with employees in person. And I would imagine she's going to be doing that herself. And if she does that, you know, successfully, I think it will put her in a strong position internally to become the new CEO, but I think it's just whether she's afforded that time.
Yeah. Well, there's lots for us to keep an eye on. Obviously, not the best reaction today from the market. The shares are down about 5%. I think that that massive loss and that kind of flat revenue growth came as a bit of a disappointment, perhaps. But I think that Entain's making the right noises. I think interim but not caretakers are a bold statement, and it's good to see that there's some strategic change kind of coming from the top down now. And well, what more can we say about it? I don't want to just engage in hearsay. We'll just keep following this story as it continues to develop.
Yeah, I think the big problem is that despite, you know, whatever they try and implement, they've warned that 2024 is unlikely to be a good year. So they've said there's challenges ahead due to regulatory changes in key markets. And I think the stock was probably down because they've guided to this £40 million hit to full year EBITDA for 2024. And the CFO said that was from obviously UK state limits, but also proposed tighter deposit limits in the Netherlands from Q2, which is obviously a key market for them. So yeah, they need to get the CEO appointment right, but even whoever they get in, it looks like it's probably going to get slightly worse for Entain before it gets better.
Yeah. Well, there you go. It's always darkest before the dawn, Jake. That's what they say. certainly, we will be following the latest on this story and bringing you more as it develops. I think we are probably going to look at our next story now, which is all about 888. and their withdrawal or possible withdrawal from the US. But first, I think we have a short commercial message to show.
Tens of thousands of games, hundreds of studios, dozens of hub market partners, an industry-leading hub wallet, and just one API. Hub 88 is connecting businesses to a world of limitless content where the possibilities are endless. Hub 88.
Well, there you have it. Let me say hello to Kundan and to Lars in the comments. Thank you for joining us. Do make sure you get involved with the conversation. If you have any questions or any insights to add, probably better to add your own insights than to ask any questions, because I don't know what I'm talking about, as you know. So, I'm joking. We are on to 888 and their possible exit from the US market. It's not going to be a total exit, but an exit of its B2C operations. What I should say really is that 888 has initiated a strategic review of its B2C operations in the US, and it has severed ties with Sports Illustrated, which it formerly had this kind of brand licensing agreement with. So currently 888 is active in four US states, which are Michigan, Colorado, Virginia, and New Jersey. So in Michigan, it operates the Sports Illustrated Sportsbook and Sports Illustrated Casino. In Colorado and Virginia, it's just the Sports Illustrated Sportsbook. And then in New Jersey, it operates 888 Casino. So it's kind of playing with a few different brands, but obviously the majority of its operations are under this agreement with Sports Illustrated. Anyway, strategic review has begun, and 888 said it will consider all potential alternatives that can deliver value for the business. So all alternatives except, it seems, continuing to run its B2C operations in those four states. So that could be selling off all or part of its B2C business. It could be gradually exiting US operations or engaging in other strategic transactions, it said. So basically, why are they doing this? Well, because the US hasn't been profitable for them. They can't see a path to profitability in the near term. Very high levels of competition, as we're always talking about. So the company believes its existing structure does not maximize returns. I think that's corporate speak for, oh, we messed up, we tried, and it's not working. So obviously, Per Widerström came in to the business after the departure of Itai Pazner, wasn't it? And he initiated this reshuffle of the C-suite and started this cost-saving program in December last year. This is obviously, I think, a big part of that. So just to give you a bit more background on the Sports Illustrated partnership and what that's going to cost and what that's going to save. So basically, 888 and Sports Illustrated had a termination agreement when they first made their partnership. And under that agreement, 888's going to have to pay a $25 million cash payment up front. And there'll be another $25 million to be paid out between 2027 and 2029. And the business anticipates that that will yield operating cost savings of about $6 to $7 million annually this year and next year. So it's not exactly going to turn things around for the business. It's going to cost them $50 million. They're going to make $13 million in savings over the next couple of years. But I guess they've burnt through enough money on this already. They can see it's not really going to work. Maybe they'll get some of that money back if they're able to sell the operations. Maybe someone wants to take over their licenses and they can get some money back that way. But yes, it's hardly cause for celebration for 888 and their shareholders, I think. Yeah, so there's a whole strategic review underway. There's no timeline given for that. So I think we've had this a few times with 888. They kind of tell us that they're thinking about doing something. Oh, we're going to change everything. We're not sure what or when or how, but just rest assured, changes are coming. It's like, okay. And just to point out that it does have some B2B relationships in the US. So, for example, it kind of, I think it provides technology for the World Series of Poker with Caesars. Those kinds of B2B agreements are not going to be affected by this. It's all about the B2C operations. So there you go. Any thoughts on that, Jake?
Yeah, just another sort of ill-fated foray into the US for a European bookmaker, I suppose. Same as we've seen with Kindred, obviously, pulled out last month, was it, I think? And now 888, and I don't think they're going to be the last. I think Supergroup reported their results yesterday, and they also said they were putting US operations under review. And I think this is just going to continue to happen now as the kind of, well, obviously FanDuel and DraftKings, but there's, probably three or four others that will stick around, and the market will continue to consolidate, I think. Yeah, the US is interesting, isn't it? Because we've seen, first of all, I think they'll definitely, 888 will definitely find a buyer for this sportsbook business in the US. Mm-hmm. We've seen a couple of newcomers recently, Penn via ESPN Bet and Fanatics, that want to throw their weight around. ESPN bought the Wynn license in New York for $25 million, mm-hmm. when Wynn again decided it was too expensive to bother competing in sports betting. And I don't think they'll get that much for this business, because New York's obviously a crucial market. But they'll make some of it back. I think Peel Hunt, the investment bank, said that 888 probably would have come out of the US a long time before now had it not been for that $50 million termination fee with Sports Illustrated. Because if you think about 888's last few quarters or even annual reports, they've not really had that cash to be able to sort of wave goodbye to. But now, I think this is a sensible decision. It doesn't surprise me that the new CEO has made it. I think he's a good appointment. And I think what we're seeing, Connor, with obviously the first story and this story, is basically just a correction this year of kind of poor strategic decisions that have been made in the industry over the last year or two. And obviously, it's really easy for me to say that sitting behind a laptop. I'm not in, these executive boardrooms at gambling companies, but I think the case still stands that, the operators are basically being made to pay for bad decisions they've made.
Bad decisions, but I do think it almost goes with the territory of gambling companies, is that they are willing to take risks. A few years ago, the Sports Illustrated deal. Why is it a smarter move for Penn to partner with ESPN than it is for 888 to partner with Sports Illustrated? They're both big brands. Obviously, ESPN's much bigger. But I think you can see why a few years ago that might have seemed like a good idea before the market reality became clear. I think the same. Okay, go on. You think obvious?
Well, no, I just don't think media partnerships work for sports betting. Like, everyone says Sky Bet is the only one that's been able to do it with any degree of success. And that was 25 years ago, or whatever, in a different market. I think Sports Illustrated isn't ESPN, as you point out. It was, it's a legacy print-based magazine that probably, I don't know what the cut-through is in the US now, but it's certainly not at the forefront of online media. And Penn and ESPN, this is their second stab at a media partnership. The first one they did didn't work out as planned. So I just think they probably were bad decisions. But I agree. They have to take these risks, and a lot of it is because they're obviously public companies, and they have to go into these markets where there's opportunities, because that's what shareholders demand at that time. So yeah, I don't envy them.
No, I think I know. Fair point. I'm happy to take my argument back. I think there's a certain element of like, I think there's a certain naivety even. And even when it comes to things like Fanatics, I think you're right about the media partnerships. They don't really seem to work all that well. And I think so many of these companies are asking themselves, well, what can we offer to people in addition to sports betting that will make them want to bet with us when they want to place a bet? So Fanatics says, well, we'll give them free jerseys and then they'll want to place a bet with us. And Penn says, well, let's make sure that the only place any ESPN readers are directed is to us, and then they'll bet with us. But actually, I think they all are missing the point in some sense, which is that people are going to bet where the betting's best. And exactly. If you look at the product, like our friends at Eilers and Krejcik do so much product testing and see how the market responds and how users respond to different apps and different user experiences. And the market share figures basically seem to follow the app testing figures, which is that the best ranked apps are the most popular apps and the apps that make most money.
Yes, so when you put it like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's always just product, isn't it, at the end of the day? And unfortunately, if it's not there, then yeah, these kind of media partnerships are certainly not going to save you.
No. And we've seen Fanatics obviously took over PointsBet, which decided it couldn't do the US. Yeah. Mentioned ESPN taking over Wynn, and it wouldn't surprise me if one of those two companies also made a move for 888's US B2C business.
Yeah. The one thing they have got, I suppose, which is pretty... I don't know actually how difficult it would be for another company to get this, but wherever it has iGaming licenses, it's got online casino in Michigan and New Jersey.
Yeah.
Obviously anywhere there's iGaming is kind of a more attractive prospect to most operators than sportsbook only. So let's see what happens. Again, there's not much more we can tell you besides conjecture about all that. We'll just keep reporting on this story as it develops. Jake, anything more to add?
No, I don't think so. No, nothing more on that.
Cool. Well, I think we'll probably wrap it up there for this week then. Thanks again for joining me. It's been really interesting to talk to you today. I might get out for a little walk now in the lovely sunshine. And there you have it. Thanks to all our viewers. Thanks to Lorena, our producer in the background. And we'll see you here same time next week. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
They ain't coming close to me. Flow is on atomic, I'm starting fires with poetry. The heart's out, staying loyal, no falling out. And if you step into the court, be ready, we balling out, yeah.